If you're interested in an MBA that will boost your entrepreneurial skills, or one that could help you carve out a career for yourself in media and entertainment, or you have other professional goals and are interested in UC Anderson, this is the show for you. Hello, and welcome to Admissions Straight Talk, the podcast dedicated to graduate admissions and helping you approach the application process thoughtfully and successfully. I'm Linda Abraham, the founder of Accepted and the host of this podcast. My mission and passion is to help you get to that wonderful moment when you can jump up and down and shout, "Yes, I'm in." First, a quick reminder, if you have an admissions-related question that you would like me to address, just go to the show notes at info.accepted.com/133. That's just the number, 133. If your question is chosen, I'll ask and answer it on the show. If you just want to ask your question in a comment on the blog, feel free to do that too. We're developing a wonderful, thoughtful community on Accepted, so feel free to share a concern, ask a question, or, again, share a thought. It gives me great pleasure to introduce Jessica Chung, Associate Director, MBA Admissions at UCLA Anderson School of Management. Jessica earned her bachelor's in business at the Haas School in Berkeley and then worked at Deloitte as a senior tax associate for a few years. Then she made a change in her career and earned her master's in higher ed at UCLA. She started her career in higher education at USC's Marshall School of Business and the Leventhal School of Accounting. She has been an Associate Director of MBA Admissions at Anderson since 2007. Jessica, welcome to Admission Straight Talk.
Thank you, Linda, for having me.
I'm so pleased to have you today. As you know, I'm an Anderson alum and still a fan, so I'm really glad to have you on and be able to have you provide insight into the program, current insight, which it's been a while for me. Can you give an overview of Anderson's MBA program and its distinctive features? I'm sure there may be listeners who aren't that familiar with the program itself.
Absolutely. So UCLA Anderson, we have several different MBA programs here within our school. Today, you know, we're primarily focusing on the full-time MBA, which is the program that I'm a part of, that I've been a part of since 2007. It's a standard two-year full-time program. We start in the fall, and students will matriculate 2 years later in June. And our program is pretty much a general management program. Some of the key features about the academics is that it is a practical and customizable curriculum that we have. You know, we really want our program to be market-focused and relevant and impactful to students as soon as they start in the fall. And so in the first year, you actually have the option to customize and have some flexibility in when you sequence certain core classes that we find to be very key, you know, especially for the recruiting process. And those classes include finance, marketing, and consulting. So for example, in the fall when you start, you can choose to take your finance class first in the fall or push that to winter. Same with marketing, and then with strategy, you can choose to take that class in the winter or the spring. So there's a little bit of that customization and options. And then we also have specializations if you want to get kind of deeper depth of knowledge and expertise in a particular function or area. Currently, we have 13 different specializations to choose from. So it's great in that sense of, you know, if you wanted to get a bit more of that in-depth learning and hone in your MBA experience and your curriculum and tailor to specific areas that you want to learn more about, you can do so. At the same time, it's flexible in the sense that you're not tied to having to do a specialization. If you want something that's more broad general management or you want to have a very customized MBA curriculum or program, you can definitely do that as well and pick the choose the classes that you think are the most relevant. We're in Los Angeles, sunny Los Angeles, with, you know, 300 plus days of sunshine each year. It's, you know, very nice weather that we're having right now. I know.
Oh, gorgeous.
Yes. Very fortunate to be in a place where, you know, there's just so much that you can do outdoors, a lot of outdoor activities. We're in a very metropolitan city in Los Angeles on the west side of LA, just a few miles from the beach. You know, just maybe an hour, a couple hours from mountains if you wanted to do partake in some snowboarding or skiing in the winter when we have snow, that is. And, you know, just a very eclectic neighborhood. You know, lots of so much diversity in terms of countries that are represented here, to languages that are spoken, to the diversity of industries and functions and companies that are represented or have, you know, have offices here within Southern California. There's just a lot, I think, that LA and our location has to offer on both a professional and a personal level. So in that sense, I'm always you know, saying that this is just a wonderful place to be, even if it's just for 2 years out of your life to pursue an MBA program. And a lot of our students end up deciding they want to stay in the West Coast because of the opportunities and the lifestyle and just, you know, the fact that they just really enjoy being here.
Right. Now, you mentioned that Anderson is a general management program and the flexibility that the program affords, which means that applicants will get the general education, but they can focus on what they most need to learn in order to be valuable during an internship, mm-hmm. right? But yeah. Now, how does like the balance between being in the general management program and being able to take a deep dive into one of 13 specializations, how does that play out?
Well, there's, you know, it kind of evolves depending on what it is that you want to focus in on, what your post-MBA career plans are. You know, you don't have to tie yourself into pursuing something right away. I know a lot of students, you know, you take the time in the MBA to learn a little bit more about different opportunities in management and leadership and in business in general. And I think as you're immersed in the program, maybe some of your focuses or interests might change a little bit from when you initially start the program or even when you're applying. So in that first year, in the first year of the program, pretty much everyone has a very similar schedule. So you're taking your core classes. Most of your classes are fixed. So aside from your finance, marketing, and strategy courses, you're going to be assigned into classes that you're specifically taking in each quarter. And you're assigned into sections that are very, you know, mixed and diverse and with students bringing in a wealth of experiences and perspectives into your class. And, you know, during that time, you might think about, okay, you know, I want to focus in my curriculum on finance because I know I want to pursue a career in investment banking or corporate finance. So, you know, in addition to my finance course, I want to also take, you know, all these different electives in finance so then I can have just a deeper understanding of just finance curriculum and issues and, you know, areas that I just want to develop in. Or maybe you want to do something that's more like, a little bit more specific, like entertainment finance or entertainment marketing, then you would, and that's when the specializations would come into play. And there, you know, those are really probably most relevant in the second year of the program, because that's when you're going to be taking the majority of your electives. So during that time, you can start to think about the classes that you really want to, the electives that you really want to focus in on. And we, with the specializations, you have but pretty much like a list of different courses that you can choose from. And typically with most specializations, it just means you take a number of electives within these prescribed courses, a number of electives to be able to get, you know, this designation that you can put on your resume that can also stand out to recruiters when you're going through the recruiting process as well. But again, you're not tied to this. So it's really, you know, it's really an option there for students to be able to utilize if they choose to want to get that deeper knowledge and expertise in those particular industries or functions.
Okay, great. Now, Anderson is famous, and it was actually quite interesting to me when I was at Anderson, which was in the late 70s, it was famous for the cooperative, collegial kind of atmosphere that it had. In the 90s, I was on a panel with one current student and alumni from different phases, you know, like very recent alumni, somebody from the 80s, and I was from the 70s. And again, each one of us separately, with no prompting, talked about the collaborative culture that we had experienced during our MBA program. And today, still, it's known for its collaborative culture. Can you give an example of what that means concretely? And
how? Yes. Definitely. I think one of the main reasons why students or prospectives apply to our program and students decide to enroll in our program from the variety of different choices that they have out there with MBA programs is because of this notion of collaboration and the supportive culture that we have. And
yeah.
That principle is, it's actually one of the three principles that really truly define who we are and our core. You might have heard some of this or seen it on our website, but yeah. The three principles include share success, think fearlessly, and drive change. And I think the number one thing that really resonates with students is this notion of the sharing success. And it's really, you know, it's hard to, it's one way, one thing to describe it, I think, you know, because it is collaborative. You know, you're definitely working in teams, you're definitely going to be working group projects, and you're constantly going to be interfacing with students and alumni and employers and whatnot. So it's really important to be able to, you know, to be able to work collaboratively in teams. But it goes beyond that notion where it's a place where you just feel this immense support from one another, from your fellow students. You never feel like you're in a place where it's all about just me and my individual, you know, success, my individual achievements. It's about, no, I want my classmates to succeed, and I want to be able to help as much as I can in their success, just as much as my classmates are going to help in my success as well, and we're going to get through this together. And there's just a lot of examples, I think, of this kind of this culture and atmosphere that we have on campus, you know, that, and it resonates anywhere from in the classroom with, you know, students who, some students who might be struggling in a class, and you'll see their classmates, like, you know, just without any prompting, wanting to help, whether it be with tutoring, with doing, like, kind of, you know, working together in groups or whatever the case might be to help one another do well academically. In recruiting, there might be a limited number of internship openings available from a recruiter coming on campus, but rather than holding close to the vest information that's going to make you stand out, or, you know, that is going to give you an edge in the recruiting process, students are going to share that information with one another. They want it to be an equal playing field, and they want everyone to have the same level of access and opportunity, you know, to be able to find, to land an internship, even if it's going to be at the expense of maybe that's not going to give me that edge that everyone else might not have. And then I think when, you know, it's really, I think another intangible part of it is when you come and visit campus, just a friendly atmosphere for perspectives, you know, students willing to just answer any questions you might have. You might introduce yourself as a prospective student. You're here on a class visit, and, you know, they're willing to answer questions, connect you with other students with like-minded goals, give you some advice on the application process, or, you know, direct you to other resources as, you know, just based on what your interests are, what you're looking for in a business school and your career plans. I think that, you know, that really friendly and supportive culture, it just extends beyond not just the current student core group, but also to visitors, prospective students through the alumni network. And I think something that we're really, really well known for. And you know, whenever, time and time again, when I ask students, you know, what is the reason why you decided to come to Anderson, given other schools you applied to? They said, you know, what it really came down to were the people. It was the students. It was, you know, just that feeling of camaraderie and, you know, and just wanting to help one another out and be that support network. And it really is truly something that's really amazing to see.
I think also you kind of summarized, or UCLA Anderson summarized, that when you talk about sharing success and really caring about the success of your colleagues, I mean, that's the essence of collaboration and clearly is a very important value at Anderson. Now, Anderson is really, really well known, and you alluded to this a minute ago, for its ties to entertainment and also for its strength in entrepreneurship. What are some areas of the program that you feel are equally strong and perhaps less well known or less appreciated?
Other parts of the program itself, I mean, I would say, you know, we have a variety of students. I think one of the areas that has really taken off in the last several years, especially since I've been here in admissions for so long, is this rise in technology, in tech, interest in technology, interest in students wanting to go into technology, and then the development and the evolution of Silicon Beach in the last several years, and just all the opportunities and excitement that's been going into this burgeoning community that we have. You know, I think more and more now we are starting to be known as a school to go to, kind of a go-to school for students interested in tech. We have our High Tech Business Association, which is very, very active in connecting students to professional development opportunities and summer internships, full-time job opportunities with employers and such. You know, they have their ties to, you know, lots of top companies that do come recruit Anderson students. You know, they go and visit different companies on what we call DOJs, or days on the job, that go from Southern California. They do a tech trek all the way up the coast, stopping in the Bay Area, and then going up to Seattle and visiting some of the companies up there like Amazon and Microsoft and such. So, you know, I think it's really, in terms of being in Los Angeles and taking advantage of that growing community and technology, is something that's really, especially for those that want to go into that kind of career field, is something that's great and an opportunity to take advantage of during this time. Something else about the program I think that's really interesting is that the majority of our students are career switchers. I know that, you know, there are a good number of students who are career enhancers that want to continue to stay in the industry or functional area that they're currently in after business school, but you know, the vast majority, 75% or more, are going to be switching industry or function or both. And we're very successful in helping students to make that transition. And I think the Parker Career Management Center is just this amazing resource that students have access to, you know, pretty much from the summer before you start the program. You start to connect with them, you start to do a lot of career preparation ahead of time, because recruiting, you know, events and everything, all the networking starts to happen very quickly as soon as the program begins in the first year. So, you know, they really want to do as much as possible to spread out some of the career prep and assessments and evaluations before you dive into going and meeting the recruiters and asking your meaningful questions and putting your resumes together and all those things that happen in addition to taking a full course load in the fall.
Wow.
And so, yeah, so I think, you know, they're always highly rated in terms of the career, the services that they provide. It's so very much individualized. They do thousands of hours of one-on-one counseling with students, individualized advising sessions, and they bring just so many different recruiters on campus, whether for formal on-campus recruiting, for posting on job postings through their Parker CMC internal site, or just connecting, working really closely with our professional student clubs to be able to provide those opportunities, you know, to connect with recruiters and companies and just create more awareness about Anderson students and just the high caliber students that we have here. They also facilitate mentorship programs between first and second year students around career. We have what's called the Anderson Career Teams program, and that is essentially second-year students mentoring first-year students through the whole summer internship recruiting process, with students kind of broken up by different industries or functional areas. And it's just one of the key ways that we, again, kind of tying back to sharing success, we connect first-year students with the second-years for them to pass down their knowledge and experience.
Wow, sounds great. What is one of the coolest things a recent Anderson grad is doing? Again, it's known for entrepreneurship, so.
Yeah, so this one actually was something that I found to be very, like, I can totally relate to. We have an alum, her name is Kelsey Dory, and she graduated a few years ago, and she created a company called Vow to Be Chic. Basically, what it is it's like the Black Tux, an online bridal gown rental company where you can pick and choose different bridal dresses for your bridal party, and
yeah,
you rent them, they tailor them, you know, kind of fit them to, you know, your measurements,
yeah,
and such, and then you can return them, so you're not laying out a big investment.
Yeah.
Perhaps you bring in a dress that you probably might not wear again.
Right.
And, you know, and I remember, you know, going through wedding planning, you know, several years back and agonizing over dresses and costs and feeling bad about how much I have to pay, you know, have to purchase or how much I have to pay or my bridal party has to pay or whatnot. So this
right.
is, I think, just really interesting. And so I know that she has, like, funding. You know, she's been in some press, her and her company.
What's the name of the company again?
Vow to Be Chic. Vow, like vow.
Vow, okay.
Vow, yeah. Vow to Be Chic.
Okay.
I know she participated in some venture case competitions. Having the spirit of innovation and support for students that are entrepreneurs or future entrepreneurs is just really crucial to have ideas like this really be cultivated here and encouraged during your time in business school. So there are various ways that students who are interested in starting their own business can develop that expertise or a safe place basically to be able to think about your ideas and then create a business plan and hopefully take it to the next level at some point.
Okay. Is there any concern that students are almost too focused on developing their business plan and launching their business, or is that not a problem or not that much of a problem?
Not too much. I think students come into business school knowing that it is a 2-year commitment, you know, at Anderson, that, you know,
mm-hmm.
your purpose here is not to start your own company. That's going to be something you're going to be doing in addition to your classes, in addition to recruiting if you're going to, you know, look for a job, go through that traditional route. And it's actually a relatively small proportion of our students who are, you know, going to be starting their company
right.
during business school, and that's what they're going to be focusing their summer internship or summertime after first year on immediately, and then diving into this, continuing to do this after business school. A lot of our students are highly interested in entrepreneurship, and entrepreneurship in the sense of just thinking like an entrepreneur, whether that means starting your own company or being able to think very entrepreneurially in an existing organization to come up with unique ideas and solutions and ways of approaching problems, you know, within a traditional or in an established business already. And for those others who do want to start a business, typically they tend to want to get a little bit more experience in an established business first, and then in the long run, start something on their own.
Right. Okay, great. Let's turn to the application at this point.
Sure.
One of the biggest questions I think applicants have, certainly at the early part of the process, is whether they should take the GRE or the GMAT. Now, mm-hmm. Anderson accepts both. Does it have any preference?
You know, we really don't have a preference, and we do accept both the GRE and the GMAT. You know, in terms of the volume, definitely we get many more applicants who submit the GMAT score versus the GRE, although there has been a steady rise in the number of GRE test takers over the last several, you know, ever since we started accepting
sure.
the GRE a few years back. And, you know, when it comes time to deciding between the two, I would say, you know, my advice is always take the test you're going to do the best in, you know, because there's no point in taking a test just because you think, you know, you hear like, oh, it's better if I'm non-traditional, take the GRE, and you don't do that well in the GRE, but you could have done better in the GMAT or, you know, vice versa. I you know, it's really a matter of take the test you're most comfortable with, and you're going to do your best in, put your best foot forward, and then submit that score to us.
Sounds good. Okay. Is Anderson using the IR, the integrated reasoning section, at all? And how is it using it?
Yeah, you know, we don't really, at this point, look too closely at the integrated reasoning, because there are still applicants who submit GMAT scores that were taken before the IR section was implemented. And so, you know, I think we're going to wait a little bit longer and see if there's a little bit more data on how relevant the IR score is in terms of predicting academic success or you know, other factors within that define success in business school and beyond. So at this point, you know, my advice would be focus on doing well on the verbal, the quantitative, and the analytical writing. Not to say you should totally dismiss the integrated reasoning section, because there could come a point where that's going to be looked at, and it's going to be a meaningful part of the application evaluation process. And so, but I wouldn't say at this point, at least for admissions now, for fall 2016, we're not looking too closely at it.
Right. I said that some of the consulting firms are looking at it.
Mm-hmm.
But, okay. And there's a rumor out there that traditional people who want to go into traditional MBA fields, consulting, banking, etc., they should take the GMAT, but it's okay for those who are not aiming for those fields to take the GRE. Mm-hmm. What do you have a comment on that particular rumor?
Well, from an admission standpoint, again, I would say take the test that's going to, you know, make you
right.
shine, that you're going to do the best in. But it is true that there are certain fields like consulting, like, you know, or banking, where when you're going through recruiting, they're going to ask you for a GMAT score. So it would be to your benefit if you're going to be recruiting and you know you're going to be recruiting for certain industries where they're going to ask for a GMAT score that's going to be part of the job process, then you should take the GMAT. Otherwise, it might preclude you from being able to recruit at certain companies that do require that score. And
okay.
you don't want to take it during like your first year of business school because you're so busy just juggling so many other things going on.
Yeah, for sure. Can you tell us what's going to happen to an application? Presume for the moment that I'm Jane applicant and I'm going mm-hmm. to submit for your round two deadline. What's going to happen to my application once it gets submitted?
Sure, absolutely. So, well, what happens is, well, number one, you will submit your application on or before, all parts of the application on or before the round two application deadline, which is this year, January 5th, 2016. And once your completed application package is received, so, you know, all the different components have been submitted to us, then it would be released to the admissions committee, you know, for a first evaluation. And all of the evaluations are very thorough. You know, we go through every single piece of the application from cover to cover, or virtually from cover to cover, because we meet on, you know, on our computers. And then after that first read, you know, we will make a decision whether we'd like to move forward with an interview or not. And if we do move forward with the interview, then we would contact you via email to set up an admissions interview, either in person on campus here or via Skype. And it's all dependent on just your location and what's most convenient for you as an applicant. Skype and in-person interviews are weighted equally the same. There's no preference given to one or the other. One benefit of doing an on-campus interview is if you have not visited campus before, you can try to connect, tie in a class visit or what we call a campus experience, so you have a better understanding and feel for the classes, get to meet students, and just get a better feel for the program and the culture here, if that's possible. But again, it's all totally up to what's best for you as the applicant and what's most, most convenient. After the interview and during the interview, basically standard kind of behavioral interview, we ask questions about, typical questions that we find in your application, about why Anderson, a little bit about your work experience and your career progression, why you're interested in business school and Anderson specifically, and some other questions along those lines. After the interview, which is about 30 minutes, then we would get an interview report. Typically, our interviews are conducted by our trained second year student interviewers, sometimes by admissions officers as well, but mostly by students. And then we would get an interview, kind of a report with feedback about the candidate and the conversation and what was addressed, things like that. And then we would integrate the interview report into another thorough evaluation by another admissions committee member. And that can happen multiple times after, as well. Candidates will get more than one read. Definitely if you're admitted to the program, you'll get multiple reads, at least two. But a lot of candidates who might be, maybe a little bit borderline or, we always like to get lots of different opinions just so we can really get get different perspectives on a candidate and what, their strengths and what they can bring into the program, how they can add to the enhance the community here, and how we can, provide them with what they're looking for in a business school too. And then after the, all of our applications are evaluated, then we would, you would hear from us no later than our decision deadline.
Is round one news going out already or not yet?
Not yet. Our round one decision release is actually next Tuesday, so we'll be hearing. Our applicants from Ramla will be hearing from us very soon, in less than a week, and everything will be, you'll get a little ping on via email letting you know that your application status has been updated, and then you'll be able to see your decision at that point. And then same thing with round two, we'll probably release some early decisions as well, just because we have a little bit more time with round two applications, and we have such a huge volume. That's typically our biggest round in terms of volume of applications. Right. So we'll try to space out some of the decisions if we, for the ones that we have a decision ready to go rather than waiting on it and sitting on it for weeks, we'll try to do some earlier decision releases. Not guaranteed, but that's typically what we've done in the last few years.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, are interviews blind or has the interviewer reviewed the application?
They're typically blind. We won't want our interviewers going into an interview with any kind of preconceived ideas or before really meeting the candidate and giving that person the chance to make their case in person and have this kind of very nice, fluid conversation. So interviewers will get the resume prior to maybe about 24 hours before the interview itself, so they have that information to start the dialogue, but usually they're not going to have read the application or anything like that. Right. Unless it's maybe an admissions committee member who happens to very coincidentally be interviewing this person.
And I would assume that, today is December 9th. I would assume at this point you've sent out all your round one interview invitations, and it's just a matter right now of making your decisions, correct? For round one.
Pretty much. Yeah. Yes. I mean, at this point, we're pretty much done with round one interviews. There's always, maybe a few, last minute interview invitations we might send out as we're crafting the class. But I would say for the most part now, we're just kind of prepping for the decision release next week.
Great. Okay. And what about the waitlist process at Anderson?
Sure.
I'm sure you waitlist some people, right?
Yes. So if you're waitlisted for the program, you would find out your decision. You would find out, when you receive your decision on or before the decision release day for the revenue client. And basically what it means is with the waitlist is it's an indication that, your application is very strong. We think that you would be a good fit with our program, but, we might not have space at this point. We have to kind of see what the rest of the applicant pool is looking like and how the class is shaping up to be, and then we'll, we'll periodically, regularly revisit the waitlist applicants and candidates and see if we can move forward with a decision. So if you're waitlisted, let's say at the end of round one, you would, you know, get a notification on or before each of the successive round deadlines. So by round two, you get an update. If you continue to remain on the waitlist in round two, then you get an update by no later than round three with a decision whether, and then after the round three deadline, if you're still on the waitlist, you can be waitlisted throughout the summer, just depending on how much day space opens up. We'll revisit the waitlist because there might be, you know, admits or folks who enroll in the program that decide that for whatever reason they're not going to come. Then we'll revisit the waitlist to see, okay, who can fill in that spot. And for our waitlist candidates, the great news is that you can submit additional information about yourself to help to add to your application that could help to enhance your candidacy for Anderson. So we actually have a waitlist guidelines blog post I usually put up around January each year. So I'm working on that right now. And you can send, updated test scores, an updated resume. If you got a promotion in the workplace or you changed jobs or you've had this really meaningful extracurricular activity that you had in which you made a very significant impact on the organization, you know, anything that you think would really help to make yourself stand out, additional data points, since you submitted your original application, we do accept that info from our waitlisted candidates. I would say to try to keep those touch points, you know, don't just like email like five times a day with one update each time, like try to keep, you know, send like one periodic emails if necessary, but you know, just something in maybe one email with, you know, all of the data points that you want us to know, just like in one or two emails would be just most helpful because we're just so busy with all right. Evaluating other applications and all the other projects we have going on campus. And if you ever have questions, we're always happy to answer those questions as well. I know that the process can be very stressful and can create some anxiety, so we want to make this as, you know, we want to be as transparent as possible, you know, kind of given the constraints that we have throughout the admissions process.
How was your round one volume compared to last year?
I would say it's pretty comparable. It is a little bit down from round one last year. Mm-hmm. I think it could be because we did scoot up our round one deadline.
Yeah.
A few weeks instead of
You also had a very good year last year, didn't you?
Yeah, we did. Yeah. We did have a great year. We had our class was slightly, our target class size is always about 360 students, mm-hmm. given the space, the resources that we have here. Our class was a little bit bigger with this year's incoming class. We were at a little over 370. Which is great, you know, the more the merrier, but, you know, we really want to try to keep that target size to about 360. Our yield or the number of students enrolled who accepted our offer was a little bit higher than we had anticipated, which is, you know, always great news for us.
It's a good problem. It's a good problem.
Yeah, exactly. So it's just a matter of kind of accommodating some of the additional students that we have. And so we're going to take that into consideration as we move forward with this year's application process. But in terms of the volume, I think we're kind of anticipating something very similar. Probably, we're not expecting like a huge significant jump just given that we played around a little bit with our round deadlines this year.
Okay, good. So you've gone through for us the process and given us some excellent insight into what happens to an application. Let's say for the moment you're reviewing applications. I'm sure you've reviewed hundreds already for round one. You're going to review hundreds more, maybe more than hundreds, I don't know, for round two and round three. What gets you excited in a positive way about an applicant?
Well, for me, I get really excited. I think something that really stands out.
When you see an 800 GMAT, right?
Yes, someone who's just, you know, a unicorn, that really gets me very excited. But, you know, in general, I mean, it's not like everyone can aspire to be that unicorn, because that's not the way the world is, but yeah. I think the ones that truly put in that effort to make your application, you know, to put your best foot forward, you know, after reading so many applications for over 8 years, you can kind of get a sense for when people have made that effort to provide meaningful data points about yourself that is relevant to the MBA admissions process. It's not just throwing in a whole bunch of data about yourself and then just getting lost in this, you know, just a whole bunch of detail that's probably not going to be that relevant into learning more about you and your Fit for Business School. But you can tell when someone has very carefully kind of edited and thought about what they want the admissions committee to know in the essay, you know, tying in, you know, your experiences to date and why an MBA is most critical now at this point in your life, and having very, you know, focused and realistic career plans after business school. Really connecting the dots, you know, how am I going to get from where I am now to what I want to be in, where I want to be in 2 years, and how is the MBA going to, and MBA specifically at UCLA Anderson, going to help to act as that bridge. So that's one thing. Another thing that really gets me excited is when I see that someone has genuine interest and enthusiasm for Anderson, and you can tell by the kind of research that a candidate has done. You know, there's a lot of information on our website, and there's a lot of information you could get from talking to students and alumni and attending events. But it's really about teasing out, you know, those experiences, resources, activities, ways to get involved that are meaningful to you, because it really resonates with how you want to be active here in the program. And our program, the culture is, like I mentioned, very supportive. That shared success is a huge, you know, theme. That's part of who we are at Anderson. But it's also a place where students are very active inside and outside the classroom. And this is a very student-driven community we have. So activities we have, TED Week, Entrepreneurs Week, you know, a lot of our Women's Summit, most of these activities are organized and run by students. So if we don't have those kinds of students continuing to come into the program every year, it's not going to happen. So when I see evidence of applicants who are very passionate about being involved in the, you know, outside the workplace or outside of just their core daily activities during undergrad and postgrad, then I know, okay, I can see this person also being very active and really giving back to the community and, you know, really contributing in a very meaningful way as a student and as a potential alum. Those are some of the qualities that I really find really interesting in applicants, you know, the ones that are going to be really, that are going to really make a difference and an impact as a student and then beyond, not just beyond just academics. Of course, we want everyone to do well academically. It's a rigorous, very, very rigorous program, I should mention, especially the first year. So we want you to be academically prepared and ready to do well in the classroom. You're going to spend a significant amount of time in recruiting activities, and then we want to make sure you're employable. You're going to get a job. You're going to get a job that, you know, resonates with what it is that you want to do. But at the same time, you're also going to be balanced. You're going to get to know your classmates. You're going to form those friendships. You're going to be that leader or the leader in various activities as well, because it's really, that's a big part of the community too, the ones that are going to drive a lot of the programming and events that happen here that really make Anderson who we are.
Thank you so much. I'd like to go back and ask a couple of questions and leave the application in for a minute. And then ask a couple of questions about Anderson itself and things that are happening at Anderson. One very, very good, and one probably good, but maybe a little bit more difficult to handle. As I mentioned earlier, I'm an alum of UCLA Anderson, or what was then GSM. And in October, I received an email from Dean Judy Olian discussing an article in the LA Times about the Korn Ferry gender study at UCLA. The study found that while faculty hiring of women has increased under Dean Olian, current faculty did not find Anderson to be as hospitable as they had hoped. It was quite clear from Dean Olian's email that she intends to respond vigorously and constructively to the Korn Ferry study. How is Dean Olian addressing these challenges at Anderson?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think number one, being open to dialogue and addressing this concern as opposed to hiding it or kind of brushing it, you know, under the rug, you know, as much as you're kind of making yourself vulnerable and the school is somewhat vulnerable to some criticism, I think it's really important just to have that conversation and put it on the table, because that's where true change is going to start to happen. Mm-hmm. So in the sense of even just talking about this and being very open to our alumni, I think that's, you know, a positive step forward, acknowledging that there is room for improvement in making the school in general a more welcoming climate for women, whether it be faculty, for students, for administration, etc. And on the faculty side, I know that there is a push to hire more female faculty and to just, you know, make it, again, a more welcoming place. That's structurally something I know that's not going to happen right away. It's going to take some time to make, to create that kind of change and really have that move forward. From the student perspective and from our end in admissions, we're really doing a lot in terms of engaging female applicants and then the women in the program. And I mean, anecdotally from the women that I know that have gone through the program or have or are alumni of Anderson, I don't think they ever felt like this was an unwelcoming environment or an unwelcoming place for women, or there was ever any sort of I'm a man, you're a woman, and there's different gender roles or assignments. It was always just very inclusive, you know, regardless of who you are and what background you're coming from and all of those good things. And, you know, women, I think everyone in general, including women, feels very supported, equally respected. You're taken seriously. Your ideas, your perspectives, your, you know, everything is taken seriously. It's your contributions are meaningful. Many women are leaders in different student clubs and organizations and on campus, and I'm really happy to see that as well. You know, we had some different initiatives going on with the students here, as well as kind of in admissions too. So, you know, one thing we have is in the beginning of the fall quarter, we had this program called Man Ambassador. Basically, it was you could see some posts on social media, like on our Instagram account, and basically it was driven by the Women's Business Connection, or WBC. Men, they had a table out on the courtyard, and men would kind of put in pledges, or they would receive pledges from men to be supportive of their female counterparts or female peers in the classroom, and then when they return to the workplace after they graduate, just knowing that, you know, it's not an equal playing field for men versus women, so just to be mindful of that and continue to keep an open mind and to be willing to dialogue and to just listen to ways that we can improve the gender climate at school but also within the workplace moving forward.
Right.
And so we had that initiative, that drive that went on in the fall, and we had some, you know, great photos and pledges kind of all along the courtyard on the walls from the different men in the program. And we have another initiative organized by the WBC called Food for Thought. And this is basically like small dinners that students host at their homes on a regular basis. And it's not really necessarily just to talk about women's issues, but also just in general, talk about any current issues going on within the business world, within you know, within management, within business school, and within the workplace. So this idea of just creating dialogue, an open and you know, safe place to be talking about these kinds of problems and what they can do to address them. You know, what are some of the solutions that we can find? What are ways that we can challenge you know, some of these norms that aren't necessarily the best norms to have at this point. And so, again, just creating that dialogue in that space and the awareness is really a key part of this.
I think it speaks very well of Dean Olien that she was so upfront about it.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Because mm-hmm. You could have just pretended or, you know, just kind of brushed it aside
or denied it.
Significance, but she didn't. She chose to actually go, you know, to discuss it, and again, that's taking a risk, but I think that's really the only way for a change to take place.
Now, on a more positive note, about 6 months ago, Anderson was a recipient of a $100 million gift, mm-hmm. and that's a pretty significant chunk of change. How is Anderson planning to use those monies?
Well, I'm not quite sure at this point, because it is a fairly new gift. From Marian Anderson, and I'm sure there are a lot of different plans for ways that the gift is going to be used. I know that there have been talks about, you know, perhaps creating a new building, you know, for within Anderson. I don't know if that money is necessarily going to be used for it. I know that, you know, there's going to be, you know, hopefully the money will also be used to, you know, for additional student programming to enrich even further the student experience here within the program, continue to bring great faculty, top-notch professors into the program, and also to be able to provide more resources to create that diverse, vibrant community that we have here. So at this point, I'm not sure, like, there's no specific talks that I know of in terms of how that money is going to be allocated into what, but in general, it's going to be just a huge benefit to the school. So really excited to see where it takes us, and, you know, definitely have Dean Judy Olien to thank for, you know, just being able to provide so much resources for us as a school, so that we can just create an even better program and a better experience for our students now and in the future.
Wonderful. What advice or final words of wisdom do you have for MBA applicants at Anderson?
My final piece of advice would be really to be yourself in the admissions process. I think a lot of times you have an idea of what does an admissions committee member would like you to be. You know, there's this ideal that might be in your mind, and I need to conform to this ideal candidate. And you know, there really is no typical Anderson student. Like I mentioned, it's a very diverse community that we have here, people from different backgrounds, different regions, different experiences, you know, all these different factors that we take a look at to craft this really amazing and rich class. So think about who we are, the three principles that, you know, that define who we are as a core, the resources that we have. So do your research, talk to people, talk to as many people as you can. That would be another big piece of some part of my advice. Sure. Is to really get to know us and talk to students. They're really here. That's part of the leadership on the different student clubs and organizations. One of their main responsibilities is to connect with prospective students and to answer your questions. So they're here for you. So it's, you know, utilize all of their knowledge and their experience to help you through the admissions process. And then when it comes time to crafting your application itself, really, you know, think about what you want us to know about you, and you know, be genuine in your interest in Anderson, and you know, go below just the surface of when you're making your case. You know, you can list out a bunch of different activities and clubs and classes, but we want you to dig a little bit deeper and find kind of more meaningful information about us and ways that you really get excited as you're doing your research, and translate that into your application and in your interview, you know, if you're coming in for an admissions interview as well.
Sounds like great advice to me. I do think that some applicants think that there's this perfect vision out there, and if they just try and be themselves, they are themselves, they're going to be a lot better off than if they try and be somebody else. That other person has already been done. Jessica, thank you so much for joining me today. Where can listeners and potential applicants learn more about Anderson's MBA program and admissions process?
Well, the first stop will be our website, which is mba.anderson.ucla.edu. That's the MBA program website, and you'll find a wealth of information about our curriculum, the application process, career resources, and then, of course, the general Anderson website, anderson.ucla.edu, has even further information on the different academic centers we have that we haven't really even touched upon today, to the research that our faculty are doing, etc. So please, that's a great place to start. Oh, excuse my phone. And then I'd also encourage students and then on our website, you can also start to connect with current students. So we have a page for our ambassadors, student ambassadors. You can submit a question or an inquiry, and then they'll get back to you with a response, and you can start that conversation there. And then we're also pretty active on social media. So I think Instagram and Twitter are great places to start, just to get a little bit more, start engaging more via social media as well. Our Instagram account is at UCLA MBA, and this was run by our admissions ambassadors. So the photos are coming from students, and it gives you more of a glimpse on the day-to-day life of an Anderson student, both, you know, professionally in the classroom as well as just in terms of social activities and such. So please do connect with us online, and then get the conversation started by getting in touch with the current student.
Sounds good. We'll include links in the show notes at info.exhibit.com/133, both to the mba.anderson.ucla.edu and to anderson.ucla.edu and the Instagram and Twitter accounts. So if you go to info.exhibit.com/133, you'll be able to connect to those sites. Listener, thank you for joining Jessica Chung and me for our 133rd episode. If you find the show worthwhile, I have a suggestion for you. Subscribe. That way you won't miss any of our future shows, which will include, we just had an interview with MIT Sloan's MBA admissions director. We should be getting on after the first of the year, Wharton Lauder on the show. And we've had MBA alumni doing interesting things. We've had people involved in career services, all kinds of things. And these are shows that you don't want to miss. Now, if you have a question for me, one quick last reminder, you can ask it at info.exhibit.com/133 or by sending an email to questions@exhibit.com. Thanks again for coming. This is Admission Straight Talk, produced by Exhibit, and I am your host, Linda Abraham. I'll talk to you again next week.
Our theme music is provided by podcastthemes.com.